Hi, and welcome to this presentation. I am one of the early stage researchers from the Astra Project. My research explores the intersections between social work and one of the most prominent economic transition topics, the circular economy. Like many research projects, its specific directions, designs, and focuses have evolved over time. Now that the project is nearing completion, I'm excited to share the insights I've gained and the discoveries I've made over the past few years. I hope you find it both interesting and useful. Now, I will briefly introduce the structure of this lecture. As indicated by the title, the overall focus is to demonstrate how transdisciplinary social work research can engage with economic transitions, using the circular economy as a specific example. To achieve this, I will first provide some background information on the economy, social work, and economic transitions. Following that, I will offer a more detailed overview of the current state of the circular economy. Next, I will explain how circular economy and social work can intersect through the lens of the social dimension. This will be followed by a discussion of my research approach, findings, implications, and personal reflections. Finally, I will present a reflective task to help you apply transdisciplinary thinking in your own contexts and strengthen your learning. A detailed reference list for all materials cited in this presentation can be found on the last slide. Economy probably doesn't seem like an interesting word or topic to many people, but it is definitely an important one. Although there are many ways to define it from an academic perspective, the most direct way to understand its importance is probably through ourselves. For example, the clothes we wear, the transport we use, the food we eat, basically everything we use or consume is organized and provided through various economic activities. Maybe it's a bit less relevant when it comes to the vegetables you grow in your gardens, but for any member of a society, the economy fundamentally shapes individual lives and social relationships. Especially nowadays, it's clear that few politicians around the world can afford to neglect the economy in their campaigns or propaganda, regardless of the disparities surrounding political stances or forms of governance. On the contrary, for a profession that claims to have commitments to social development and human welfare, social work does not seem to have sufficiently integrated the economy into its discipline, whether as a field of practice or a base for knowledge and expertise. However, there are a few exceptions. Over the past decades, a small number of social work researchers have reflected on the economy from various perspectives, such as globalization and finance. Another interesting angle comes from eco-social work, rooted in the realization of the interlinked dynamics between environmental, economic, and social issues. This approach has explored innovative solutions and experiments. These efforts from social work offer valuable insights and inspiring directions to further explore the intersections between the profession and economic issues. Meanwhile, the economic field itself has also started reflecting on the flaws and disastrous social and environmental consequences of traditional economic theories. Even though there is broad recognition of the costs of externalities and the need for change to address ecological limits, the field remains filled with intense debates regarding how to move forward. For instance, some think it's possible to achieve green growth or sustainable growth, while others believe the only viable path is degrowth, deliberately reducing economic activities. Due to time constraints, I won't go into the specifics of these debates or their differences here, but I encourage you to look into them if you're interested. Besides the growth debates, there are also other discussions and proposals, such as the donut economy, blue economy, bioeconomy, and circular economy, which is the focus of my current research. There are many good reasons for choosing the circular economy as an example, which I'll discuss in the following slides. However, I'd like to point out something I've observed in my readings. Regardless of their fundamental disagreement, both growth and degrowth advocates seem to support the idea of a circular economy. This makes circular economy a particularly interesting topic for investigation. One of the most distinct features of the circular economy is probably its popularity, especially compared to many other economic concepts. The map at the top shows which countries and regions have adopted or developed circular economy missions. Although it doesn't yet have full global coverage, it's clear that, from east to west and from the global south to the north, the circular economy has gained significant recognition from governments worldwide. In particular, almost all the major economies, such as China, the EU, Japan, and the US, are included. Personally, I find this somewhat ironic. These governments rarely agree on anything these days, even on critical issues like climate change. Yet, they all seem to agree that the circular economy is an important tool to address environmental pressures. This raises an intriguing question. Why? Why is the circular economy so popular across borders and political divides? Is it genuinely about the environment, or is there something else driving this enthusiasm? Of course, the circular economy isn't just popular with policymakers. Academics around the world and from various disciplines have also flocked to the topic in recent years. The study I cited here analyzed relevant publications, and you can see how the numbers have skyrocketed in less than a decade. And this trend hasn't stopped. I started working on this topic in 2021, and the surge in publications has been a very direct experience for me. Beyond academia, many other stakeholders have eagerly embraced the circular economy, including NGOs and businesses. By now, you're probably curious and wondering, what exactly is the circular economy? Although I've briefly touched on what it involves, I haven't yet provided a specific definition. And that's intentional. The reality is, I can't responsibly offer you just one definitive answer. The term means different things to different people and contexts, making it as complex as it is widely adopted. Here, you can see another distinct feature of the circular economy: the ongoing controversies surrounding its very definition. This issue first came to my attention in 2021 when I began working on this project. As a concept that hadn't appeared in my prior education or any other form of learning, it seemed natural and essential to find out what it actually means. However, that's also where the frustration began. As you can see from the first point, these authors found over 100 different definitions of the circular economy during their attempt at conceptual clarification, and then developed their own version. But a few years later, in a follow-up study, they discovered that even more definitions had emerged. Based on their findings, most definitions agree that the circular economy is a combination of various strategies, such as reuse, recycling, and reduction, with a focus on economic and environmental benefits. However, the sheer number of definitions, and their continued growth, is a fascinating finding in itself. It highlights not only a lack of conceptual consensus but also the limited influence of attempts to unify the term. One possible explanation is that the circular economy attracts stakeholders from diverse backgrounds, disciplines, focuses, and interests, making it almost impossible to create a universally acceptable definition. For the second point, you can see some examples of this conceptual confusion. While the three rupees I just mentioned, reduce, reuse, and recycle, are popular, some definitions add more R's, such as refuse, rethink, repair, recover, or reskill, among others. Essentially, new R's are often introduced whenever someone feels dissatisfied with an existing definition or perceives flaws in previous ones. This results in the circular economy becoming a buzzword, used widely but with varying interpretations tailored to different priorities. On the one hand, this highlights the flexibility and adaptability of the concept. On the other hand, this conceptual ambiguity has its downsides, which I'll address shortly. However, it's worth noting that such debates are probably an unavoidable stage for any emerging concept. In fact, having these debates isn't necessarily a bad thing, as efforts to unify the concept often come with their own biases and flaws. Thus, it's arguably more meaningful at this stage to acknowledge the diversity of interpretations rather than to oversimplify the concept by forcing a single definition. This approach, of course, presents challenges for research and practice. But for the sake of simplicity in this lecture, I suggest understanding the circular economy as an approach aimed at reducing the reliance of economic activities on raw materials and energy. It achieves this by improving the efficiency of resources already circulating within the economy. Its strategies include, but are not limited to, the R's I mentioned earlier. Now let's turn to the negative side of this conceptual ambiguity. For a circular economy approach to truly benefit the environment, the first and most critical step is to avoid or reduce consumption. This is the most direct and effective way to mitigate our impact on the planet. Other strategies, such as recycling, still require additional material and energy inputs and impose environmental pressures if overall consumption levels are not reduced. However, most research conducted under the banner of the circular economy has prioritized recycling, while reduce remains the least popular or valued strategy among many stakeholders. This can likely be explained by some everyday examples. Consider the products we see in stores, such as sports shoes or electronics. Producers are often eager to highlight their environmental responsibility by advertising how much recycled material is used in their products. But how many would willingly reduce unnecessary production if it threatened profits or market competitiveness? Consumers, in a different way, sometimes face a similar issue. This makes the circular economy vulnerable to abuse or greenwashing, as anyone can claim alignment with the concept by adopting a single strategy, or even just partially implementing one, that suits their interests. In these cases, the actual outcomes may be far from sustainable. To make the circular economy truly effective, we need to look beyond the individual strategies and critically examine the assumptions, goals, and means underpinning various circular economy narratives. However, just as with definitions, these discourses are also contested. This table is from an article that explores the various discourses underpinning circular economy debates. Interestingly, the authors didn't limit their focus to data strictly related to the circular economy. Instead, they expanded the scope to include broader economic transition topics. Despite this, the findings effectively reveal the core divergences in how circular economy is framed. The authors categorize these discourses along two main dimensions. First, whether they holistically consider the social, economic, and environmental aspects, and second, how they view the potential of technological innovations in addressing the crisis. The table is quite clear, so I won't go into detailed explanations of each discourse or their differences. If you're interested, you can pause the video here to read through it yourself. What I want to emphasize is that the currently dominant discourse is what the authors term the technocentric circular economy. This dominance partly explains why the circular economy has gained such widespread appeal across diverse regimes and contexts. Social and political dimensions are largely excluded from consideration, and instead, the circular economy is framed as a technological solution to sustain and stimulate the economy by ensuring an uninterrupted, and seemingly limitless, supply of materials through circulation. This leads to an important observation. The circular economy operates in two distinct contexts. On the one hand, it is an ideologically contested concept with varying interpretations and debates. On the other hand, its real-world application is dominated by a biased, technocentric approach. This duality complicates research choices. Investigating the circular economy as a debated concept inevitably requires a theoretical focus, which risks alienating practitioners and stakeholders. Conversely, investigating it as a popular yet biased approach risks reinforcing problematic discourses. How I navigated this challenge and designed my research will be explained later. But next, I will clarify how the circular economy connects to social work through the lens of the social dimension. As I mentioned earlier, the circular economy is a transdisciplinary topic, offering countless angles for exploration. My research, however, approaches it specifically from a social work perspective, which naturally emphasizes the social aspects. This brings us to an essential question. What exactly is the social dimension? The meaning of the social dimension varies across disciplines. For instance, from a business perspective, the social dimension might focus on aspects like customer satisfaction, an interpretation that doesn't align with social work. In social work, the social dimension is incredibly broad, encompassing diverse topics such as mental health, disability, healthcare, and community work. In a sense, everything social work does is part of the social dimension. But using these particular lens to explore the circular economy has its downsides. For one, you may find few overlaps between traditional social work concerns and what the circular economy prioritizes. Even when overlaps exist, relying solely on social work's perspective can limit the discussion's relevance to a multidisciplinary audience. Since circular economy research involves stakeholders from many disciplines, our approach to the social dimension must remain flexible and inclusive of different interpretations. So, when discussing the social dimension, we must adopt the same approach as we do with the circular economy, acknowledging diverse viewpoints and maintaining flexible boundaries. Next, let's consider the connections between the circular economy and the social dimension. If you revisit the circular economy discourses I mentioned earlier, you'll notice that each naturally defines the social dimension differently. For example, in technocentric discourses, which largely exclude social and political topics, the social dimension might focus on employment and jobs tied to economic productivity. In contrast, more critical discourses challenge social systems and include broader institutional and societal issues. This shows that the connections between the circular economy and the social dimension are highly flexible and context-dependent. But how are these connections reflected in reality? Narrowing the focus to practical applications reveals that circular economy initiatives often involve limited changes, meaning their scope for addressing social dimensions is also restricted. Yet these real-world connections are crucial, even more so than theoretical ones, because understanding them allows us to evaluate whether the circular economy truly supports sustainable development. Are these initiatives as beneficial to people and the environment as their advocates claim? Finally, why should social work care about the connection between the circular economy and the social dimension? This question may especially resonate with those less interested in sustainability topics. The simple answer is this: circular economy initiatives, or activities conducted under their banner, inevitably impact people. These impacts might arise through changes in economic relationships or environmental conditions. Such changes can carry risks, such as threats to equality and human welfare, or they can create opportunities. But without understanding the connections between the circular economy and the social dimension, we cannot assess these risks and opportunities, let alone act on them effectively. Finally, let me explain how I conducted my research on this topic. There were two main purposes. First, I aim to uncover how the connections between circular economy and the social dimension manifest in reality, while identifying the associated risks and opportunities. Second, I sought to combine the knowledge and experience I gathered to illustrate how social work can creatively engage with economic topics. To address the first purpose, I conducted three distinct but interconnected studies, which are outlined on this slide. The findings and reflections related to the second purpose will be discussed in the next section. Study 1. Review of empirical evidence. The first study was a review of empirical evidence from existing activities carried out under the banner of the circular economy. The findings suggest that the most frequently mentioned social categories include livelihood, health, value, identity, and community. However, the impacts claimed are often conditional and even contradictory. This is not surprising, as the examples on the right illustrate. Both images show recycling, the most popular circular strategy, yet applied through entirely different methods and contexts. Unsurprisingly, the social impacts vary widely between these cases, since no circular activity operates in a vacuum. Free from pre-existing social, economic, and political structures, it is evident that more holistic changes are required to ensure circular economy's sustainability potential. Social work has much to contribute here, including identifying justice and inclusion issues surrounding these practices. If you are interested in more detailed findings and discussions, the article link is in the reference list. Study 2. Circular Transition in European Cities. For the second study, I focused specifically on the circular transitions of European cities. This qualitative research explored the views of 14 experts across 11 cities with clear circular visions. The findings revealed that while the social dimension is not a primary focus or deeply integrated with circular economy strategies, it plays a critical role in transition processes and is simultaneously impacted by them. However, a significant gap exists between the ideal social environment needed for a successful circular transition and what the current processes facilitate. Without a shift from technocentric approaches to more holistic, transformational strategies, the future of circular economy remains precarious. There are two key points here. 1. Need for social work. Several participants explicitly highlighted the importance of social work, even though they had not directly collaborated with social workers. This highlights both the gaps and the opportunities for social workers to engage more actively in these transitions. 2. Justice and inclusion. Social justice and inclusion emerged as core concerns. While none of the participants had a background in social work, these findings underscore the importance of integrating social considerations into circular economy frameworks. They also serve as a reminder that, in an era of sustainable development, disciplinary boundaries are increasingly blurred. Social work risks falling behind unless it broadens its horizons. For those interested in more details, this study's findings are also linked in the reference list. Study 3. Policy analysis. The third study focused on analyzing policy documents related to circular economy. As this work is still ongoing, I cannot share many specifics yet, but I hope to publish it next year. In the next slide, I'll discuss the major implications of these studies for social work. This part relates to the conclusion of my PhD research, which is still a work in progress. As such, the points here are framed more at a general level rather than being specific or exhaustive. Key implication for social work. The first and perhaps most critical implication for social work is the need to recognize that the world is constantly evolving, not only technologically but also in terms of social relationships and dynamics. Few topics illustrate these changes as vividly as the economy, given its fundamental role in shaping individual lives and societal structures. However, these changes are not always positive, especially from the perspective of social work, which is a value-based profession with clear visions for societal well-being. Even when changes occur under promising banners like sustainable development, there can be significant divergences between the claims made and the realities experienced. Therefore, social work must not only pay attention to economic transitions as an interesting subject, but also critically reflect on the challenges they pose and the opportunities they offer to shape a better, more equitable future. How can social work adapt? To meet these challenges, social work must evolve beyond its traditional boundaries, focuses, and disciplinary identity. My experiences suggest that other disciplines have already begun to make such shifts. For example, some economists are integrating environmental and social justice issues into the development of their field. While social work has made some progress in challenging its institutionalized identity, such as through the development of eco-social work, it remains largely framed within traditional parameters. This limitation is evident in the structure of social work education and its established fields of practice. Specifically, when it comes to engaging with economic issues, social work lacks the necessary knowledge and established channels to demonstrate its potential and impact, even though such issues align closely with the profession's ethical commitments. Opportunities for growth. These challenges also point toward ways to reshape social work, ultimately creating a new identity that is better equipped to address contemporary challenges. The diagram here offers a preliminary illustration of this evolving framework. While I plan to develop it further in writing next year, I hope you find it helpful in visualizing the direction social work might take to remain relevant and impactful in addressing these complex changes. Reflection task. This brings us to the final part of this lecture. While we've covered the key content, I'd like to leave you with a reflective task. This exercise is designed to help you think more deeply about what has been introduced and consider how you can strengthen, apply, or extend this learning in your own contexts. As you can see from the title, this task is not particularly challenging. More importantly, it gives you the chance to experience what it feels like to engage in transdisciplinary work. The task is broken down into 5 steps, and the instructions provided are quite straightforward, so I won't repeat them here. There are also tips included to guide you in reflecting throughout the process. My hope is that by working through these questions, you'll uncover some interesting insights and develop meaningful reflections. For those of you who might not be fans of conceptual or paperwork and would rather engage in something more hands-on, I'm offering an alternative option. Instead of diving into documents and literature, you can take a more interactive approach. Go out and talk to people who are actively working on economic topics. When you engage in these conversations, bring along questions that connect your social work background with the experiences and knowledge of the people you're speaking with. You can also take a more informal, open-ended approach to these discussions. However, be mindful of key questions such as, what are the gaps between your knowledge and theirs? What differences emerge between your assumptions and theirs? This approach might reveal connections or perspectives that are more engaging than you expect. Whether you choose the reflective or hands-on option, I hope this task provides valuable insights into the intersection of social work and economic issues. Now we have reached the end of the lecture. I sincerely hope you've enjoyed it and that you found it insightful in some way. Thank you very much for your attention. I would also like to express gratitude to my main supervisor, Professor Ila Lena Matthies, who not only envisioned this exploratory direction but also provided the valuable opportunity to bring it to life. She also connected me with my second supervisor, Associate Professor Tina Onkila from the Business School. Their transdisciplinary spirit, combined expertise and insights from 2 distinct fields have been critical and irreplaceable in guiding and supporting my research journey. This collaboration itself offers an example of how interdisciplinary efforts can enrich social work education and practice, a point that might be worth considering as we move forward in this field. Thank you once again for being part of this lecture. On the next page, you will find the reference list for all the sources mentioned. If you have any questions, ideas, or reflections that you'd like to share, please don't hesitate to reach out. I'd be happy to connect with you. Wishing you all the best in your social work research, studies, and practice journey.